This is Full Throttle Racing with Kane on FM Talk 106.5, the most comprehensive racing report on the radio. From the dirt to the dragway, from karts to NASCAR, if it's racing, it's covered. Here's our host, racetrack announcer and race car driver Kane, with a Full Throttle Racing report.
Hey, welcome to the show and happy race day. It's Full Throttle Racing with Kane on FM Talk 106.5. And later today, hey, we're going to podcast the show online at usfdracing.org. You know, Hurricane Motorsports teamed up with United States Fire Department Racing. Check out the website and you can hear, gosh, a year and a half's worth of shows on there. And what a good one we've got today. How about the number 41 bomber driver from Mobile International Speedway? Rookie of the year, had everybody around the Gulf Coast looking for his race car last week. Someone actually stole his race car. An amazing story. We're going to talk with Jerry Goff here in just a few minutes. Also, Garrett Potter, who's the director of karting operations at NOLA Motorsports Park. We've teamed up with them, the race show, and we've had lots of fun. And they have got what's called Kartapalooza. It's coming up Monday, December 31st. Your chance to win run three different races on three different courses on their equally prepared karts. It's something, it's a lot of fun. You've got teams, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And I've got a lot of emails through Facebook during the holiday seasons when things are a little bit slower around the tracks. Love to play some of the older interviews of the show. And about 2 years ago, we had Ned Jarren, a great story when he was coming up in Talladega. And we've played this one before, but around this time every year, we have a couple people that like to hear it, so we'll probably put that one on. And then, hey, how about NASCAR? Already preseason testing at Charlotte this week. Dustin Long with SI.com and USAtoday.com will be on the show and going to tell us what he saw, those new car body styles, some quick times. So we'll get it started and let's go racing. Now, we got a lot of other stuff to talk about. We've got a couple of things we want to talk about after we talk with Jerry. Bradley Hoven was an amazing driver at Sunny South Raceway, and he was killed in an accident. The funerals today. We're going to talk a little bit about who Bradley was. Also proud of a couple of my team members. Rusty Powell Sr. and Rusty Powell Jr. are part of what's called the Patriot Guard, and they had one of the hardest things they had to do. This Patriot Guard travels around and escorts military funerals, and it's very special to them in their heart, and they do it with motorcycles to keep some of the order, if you will. And it's also an honorable salute to these guys, and they had to do one of the hardest things, is bring back the body of one of their cousins, Bradley Powell, that was killed this week at Fort Bragg by hit and run drivers. So tough things for the team, and we pray for them. And as we get started, also thoughts and prayers of the massacre in Connecticut. Just a hard weekend to get started, but we still got a lot to cover. Good racing coming up, and somebody who had an incredible year, and we're going to learn all about, is the number 41 Jerry Goff. And I want to say good morning to Jerry, and hey man, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks man, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First of all, before we get started about the great year you had, all the accolades, but man, last Wednesday or Thursday, when did you have all hell break loose in a racer's nightmare? Somebody pulled up, stole your race car, and the funny thing is, well, there's nothing funny about it, but the strange thing was one of my drivers and wife saw that car going down the street with no taillights on, and they thought, wow, that's weird. Hey, that's a red bomber. I wonder if that's Jerry's car. What happened, man?
Oh, well, early last week, we had the car sitting out at the shop from the Derby, and we were getting ready to start taking it apart and working on it, getting it fixed for next year. Yeah. And I was just at work, and the teammate, buddy Brandon, he texted me and said, "Hey, man, did you come get your car?" And I said, "No, what are you talking about?" Oh, no. He said, "Man, your car is gone." So, yeah, that started the whole deal. So, we searched all over the place trying to find it, asking people. Nobody knew anything about it. We finally found it over here in a scrapyard.
Now, how long did it take? How long of a process was that? Because I know by the time it got to the scrapyard, you had an incident and we'll get into in a couple minutes on the Snowball Derby. So the car was already damaged, but nothing like what you saw at the scrapyard, right?
Absolutely. It was absolutely disheartening to see, you know, something like that that you put so much work into just sitting in the scrapyard, you know, but it was just a wreck. It was tore all up, and the guys, we're going to try to fix it, but it was a nightmare.
My gosh. Now, once you found that, and now what happened to the guy? The guy, they did find the guy, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and now hopefully still in jail, pressing charges and all this, that, and the other, but that's just a terrible thing. So when you found that, what kind of things can you do to the car? I saw it looked like the top of the roof was kind of caved in? I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine. It didn't look like there was much you could do to the car. Now, you've already got it probably already stripped down, so what are you finding?
Well, when we got it stripped down, obviously, just, you know, you can look and see that the body is messed up, mm-hmm. And the roof was caved in from where they picked it up, you know, off the trailer. But when we started stripping it down, the frame was bent a little bit from the Snowball Derby, but not anything like it is now, and we're just hoping that it can be saved.
Yeah, because that car was a hot rod. It was all year long in the years before that. Let's talk about the Snowball Derby. This was your first Snowball Derby, and it's something when you go over to that race, it's not like any other race. You know, you race drivers, I feel like they race you. I think you do the same thing. But over there, you cannot give an inch for the Snowball Derby because it's the Snowball Derby. It's aggressive from lap one, turn one. What was your initial thoughts of the whole day taking in the Snowball Derby as a first-time driver to track, Jerry?
Well, being our first time down there, just like most of the year, being our rookie year, we just wanted to kind of fill it out, you know, and just have a good run. You know, we obviously wanted to try to have somewhere in the top five, top three, but, you know, we would have been happy just, you know, being to bring the car home in one piece and having a good run and learning a lot. But, well, we ended up, we were pretty good in practice. I wasn't very happy with the car. We couldn't figure out what was going on, but we had a good qualifying run. We ended up ultimately getting the pole award after pre-race tech, and then so we're pretty fast, and then I don't know. It just we had a game plan to be patient. You know, it's a long race. The Derby's a long race, and
well, that usually goes out the window about lap one, turn one, doesn't it? Okay, we're just going to do this, and when someone's beating on your side three wide, and they're starting to come down on you, you got to go.
absolutely, and that's why starting up front, we started outside pole, and that was huge because we were able to get a good jump on the restart and just kind of, you know, fall in line and try to ride for a little while, and then it the past couple of years, everybody knows that the days helped me, and the past couple of years, they went over there and sat on the pole at the Snowball Derby and ended up wrecked.
Yeah.
So I've tried to listen to them, and, you know, and they taught me a ton about racing on that track, that race specifically, and we had a game plan to try to be patient, and it just, I don't know. Just kind of backfired on it.
So what happened? I remember coming back out after I had an issue with one of the hoses that blew off the motor. And when I was pulling out, and you can hear it in my in-car cam, I look over and I can see you walking down. I'm like, no. Because it doesn't matter if you're racing, you know, against throughout the year. I still think, and a lot of the drivers, hey, 251, that's Mobile. When you guys go over to the Pensacola, you're going to battle the 850 guys, which, and that's the area code, but they don't take or give. And if it's not going to be your team, you sure want one of your guys from 251 to bring it back. And that's how I feel. And I just felt so disheartened. How did you end up against that wall?
Well, I don't remember what lap it was, maybe 8 or 10. It was still way early. We were riding, I had let David Johnson go maybe a lap or two before.
Fast.
And he was really quick, and we were just kind of riding. So, and being a Mobile guy, I trusted him, you know, racing around him. I knew he wasn't going to do anything. So we were riding behind him, and somebody told me that a car had blown the motor or maybe a water pump or something, but there was smoke on the track, and we saw the smoke, and I think me and David thought it was a wreck. So David checked up, I checked up, and...
Oh, man.
You know, not everybody behind us checked up.
Boy, you're being nice.
Yeah.
Man.
It ended up being, it's kind of a racing deal, I guess. Yeah. I mean, you could be mad about it if you wanted, but...
It's the Derby.
The truth of the matter is, we all just kind of stacked up, and we were the odd man out, so...
Well, let me ask you, how did you get started with the love of racing?
We started... Our first car was a Stinger. We bought it and raced it at Sunnyside. I don't think you would classify that as a love of racing because I couldn't always stand that car. But
what kind of car did you drive as a Stinger? I know the Saturns are always really good there.
Oh yeah, that was our first car. We did all right down there, but that's where it got started. But ever since we got started down there, we wanted to move to Mobile and try to find, you know, something we could race out there. We bounced around a couple of different things. We got into the Legends. We got into the Pro Challenge briefly. And we had a couple of sportsmen, but nothing was very happy with. And then we got into the Bombers. And then when we got into the Bombers, we got teamed up with the Days, and they just took me in. And taught me everything that I know now, and then, you know, things just took off from there. So
it was huge, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I wouldn't have been able to do anything this year without those guys. Let's talk
about your rookie year in Mobile International Speedway, which to stand there in victory lane is a coveted spot, I think, because there have been so many NASCAR stars and the level of people that have parked their cars there. It is always something special if you can do it one time, but you did it more than that. Talk about the year this year.
Well, we had an up and down year. We started off kind of slow, started off in a car I wasn't real familiar with, and then we ended up getting the red car that we have now. But our goal was going into the year, we knew we wanted to run for Rookie of the Year, and we wanted to try to finish the year somewhere in the top five in points. And we were able to do both things, and of course we wanted to get a couple of wins, and mm-hmm. we were able to do that, and we picked up the win at the Lee Fields Memorial, and that was pretty important to me. But it was pretty up and down. We had some bad nights. We had some good nights, but can't really complain. We finished in top five in points, yep. and being Rookie of the Year was really important to us.
That's strong. That's, yeah, and you earned it for sure. And you've raced at other tracks as well throughout the year. What's your favorite track to race at? Is it Mobile, your home track? Obviously it is. Is that your favorite?
It is. I love mm-hmm. Mobile, and I'm not going to stop racing at Mobile.
Yeah.
We do like going to Five Flags. I like the track over there. I like the people over there. Mm-hmm. Tim Bryant's an awesome person. He always tries to help everybody over there. So,
well, what about sponsors? We got about a minute and a half left here. What kind of sponsors helped you this year, and who can help you for next year?
Well, this year we had all year long we had Elliot Massey, Agricola Hardware on the car. He helped mm-hmm. us out. It's always nice to have somebody that you can call, and no matter what you need, he's going to try to help you. So that was huge. And then we had of course, Daytona on the car, mm-hmm. but Jimmy Day and everything they do for us. I can stand here all day and tell you a list of things, you know, that they've done for me. And I have to say, at the Derby, one of your teammates, Rusty Senior, mm-hmm. helped me out a ton.
Oh, good.
Being able to buy our gas. We weren't even sure if we were going to have the money to go down there. And, For him and other people to come out of their own pocket when they didn't have to, it meant a lot to us.
And that goes to show what kind of folks that the racing community is. Doesn't mean it doesn't matter if you're on a different team or not, but when it comes down to it, when it comes down to the nut cutting, as they call it, we always got your back, and it's the same, and it's always good to see that. That's that camaraderie, and I love to see that at the Speedway, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, man, I know you've got things to do. We've got more show to continue, so I appreciate you coming on. Let me ask you, if people want to help, maybe try to sponsor another winning car, or I hear rumors of a truck next year. How can we get a hold of you, man?
You can find us on Facebook. The Day Racing, we have our own Facebook page. You get on there and contact us about sponsorship. That'd probably be the best way to do it.
Well, man, we appreciate you coming on the show, and I know you'll be back, obviously, next year. What are you running next year, Jerry?
The plan is right now to have three trucks.
Nice. Good luck, brother. Go win the lottery, all right? Absolutely. Jerry Goff, a great competitor and a good driver. Coming up, we've still got the Ned Jarrett interview. We're going to try to swing that one in. It's a long one, so we'll see. Also, Garrett Potter coming up from New Orleans, Louisiana Motorsports Park. Hang on. Hey, welcome back to the show. And I tell you what, these guys, it's hard to get race car drivers up at this early hour, I'm telling you, but that's okay. Garrett Potter, the director of karting operations, got a call into him. He's already at the Motorsports Park. Going to have a huge day of racing over there. We'll talk about it here shortly, but I told you, during this season, it's been a lot of fun to have some of the people that we've had on the air, and I like to at least do one interview that we've had in the past, and this has been one, probably the most requested interviews between this one, and there's a couple other real good ones. I had a good one with Kurt Busch we might have to put back on there, too, but take a listen, sit back, and enjoy the next 15 minutes. This is going to be an education. Ladies and gentlemen, take a listen to this past interview with Ned Jarrett. And welcome back to the show. It's Full Throttle Racing with Kane on FM Talk 106.5. And as always, thanks to Ed's Seafood Shed right on the causeway. You can feed the gators and feed yourself. Pretty amazing place there if you've not been there. And what a special show we've got today. Again, thank you to Bobby Allison for coming on, sharing some great memories. We're billing this as the NASCAR Hall of Fame show, as Dustin Long, the president of the National Motorsports Press Association, will be coming up here in just a few minutes as well. But I'm so excited, and it's such an honor to have my next guest on. Won four NASCAR National driving titles in less than 14 years of competition, 1953 to 1966. We've got so much to ask Mr. Ned Jarrett. Good morning, Ned, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Now, this Saturday morning, we're having a, you know, we're having a little discussion on Talladega. And last night, you were actually back at the 25th annual Race Fever. This is something that you've teamed up with Alabama's Institute for the Deaf and Blind. Tell everybody a little bit about this organization and how you got involved, Ned.
Well, that's something that has been close to my heart for many years, because they do such a good job there at the Alabama Institute for the Deaf and Blind. And when you go there and see some of their patients and students that they bring out to the Race Fever Night, and realize, you know, how fortunate we are and how unfortunate some of those people are, but yet they have a facility and a program there that can help them and make their lives a lot easier, and certainly through the funds that are raised through Race Fever Night goes a long ways towards what they can do for them. They started the Race Fever Night 25 years ago, and I went to it.
Wow.
Then signing autographs and a few things, and then they moved it into the Speed Dome there.
Yeah.
And where they could accommodate a lot more people and do it inside. It was on the outside for a number of years, and so they've then asked me to become the master of ceremonies of it. So we did that for many, many years, and then my health sort of got in the way a couple of years ago, and I backed off, but they wanted me to come back for the 25th anniversary last night, and that was a very special evening, and to come back and be a part of it once again. And that, through the fan support and the racing community support, has raised a lot of money over the years for that cause, and that's something we're very proud of.
It's just another reason why, Ned, they call you the gentleman. And I love the story, and maybe you can get into it a little bit more, you know, how you really got that name. You decided to sell your car back in, gosh, what was it? I want to say 61, the number 11 Chevrolet, to Wendell Scott at the time, back in that time of our country. That was probably one of the, I wouldn't call it a brave thing to do, but I think the right thing to do. Wendell Scott, obviously the first African-American or black NASCAR driver. Tell me about how you decided to go ahead and give that car to Wendell.
Well, Wendell didn't have the resources that we had. I managed to get a little bit of factory support in 1961 and was able to win the championship. Sort of lucked up on it, to tell you the truth, but nevertheless, we won it. And then Wendell had started racing along about that time in the Cup Series, or what is now the Cup Series, and did a great job with what he had to do with, but he just didn't have the resources, as a lot of people back in those days. And I eventually got some help from Ford and went back to Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wendell wanted to buy one of my cars, so I sold it to him for a song.
For a song, huh?
And just to help him out, because I felt that he was good for the sport. He was a good guy. He was a good guy to race against. Unfortunately, back in those days, you know, the color of his skin was not accepted by everybody, and that was too bad. That had no bearing on what my relationship with him. But and I grew up in the South in North Carolina. But anyway, we sold it to him. That's the car that he eventually won at Jacksonville, Florida, to get his only win.
Yeah, 64, you went back to driving Fords. I think it was for Bobby Long, won your first Super Speedway race in Atlanta, second in that season behind Richard Petty. Not a bad year, was it?
No, it wasn't. We won 15 races that year, including that one at Atlanta, and we also won a 500-lapper at the old Asheville-Weaverville Speedway in Asheville, North Carolina. And so we won a good... I think Richard won 9 races that year, and we won 15, but
that's
we had
awesome.
A lot of engine problems, and so that kept us from being a little bit closer in the championship, but we vowed that we'd come back and try to win it again the next year, and was able to do that.
Oh, yeah, including 13 wins. You won the Southern 500 in Darlington in 1965. I got to ask you just the personal experience of driving in the NASCAR Convertible Series. You did it for 1 year in 1959. That must have been just... Racing's a rush anyway. I race as well as announce here at Mobile International Speedway and have the racing show here. But I can't imagine racing on a convertible, man. What was that like?
I tell you, that was fun. First, you could see out of them.
Yeah, no kidding. There's no bars in the way, is there?
On your head.
Gosh.
And so that was a lot of fun. I hated to see the convertible division go away because it was so much fun to race those cars, and it just felt like, you know, you were out in the open and just I didn't see any negatives about it at all, although some people thought, well, maybe they were not as safe as the hard tops, but I'm not sure that that piece of sheet metal on top is.
It was more for looks, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Well, let me ask you also, if I'm not mistaken, 1965 was the year that you broke your back, too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Tell us about what happened that day and what track it was.
That was Greenville, South Carolina. It was a half-a-mile dirt track, and I was leading the race, and caution came out, and we knew that we had to come in for fuel, and it came in, and I got back out first. But when I accelerated on the restart of the race, the engine just died. Mm. We learned later that there was water in the gas that was put in the car.
Oh.
And but three or four cars hit me going down into turn one, and the last one hit me. He was going full bore.
Wow.
And Doug Cooper was driving that car. But, I mean,
it's racing.
It was nobody's fault. I mean, just I was in the way.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get out of the way.
Yeah.
And he hit me and knocked me into the guardrail, and the seats that we had in those cars then just, there were no technology whatsoever involved in it. And so it broke the seat down and broke my back and pulled all the muscles loose, and the lower vertebra never healed. It's still, I still live with that today, and I exercise every day of my life to stay mobile.
Yeah, and I saw that, and and I know you've had heart problems, I believe, in 2002, and you've even decided you've gone on to some alternative medicines. Do you feel that's been a good thing for you? I know you're a heavy golfer as well, so exercise very big in your world, isn't it, Ned?
Yes, it is. I have to do it for my back, but it also helps my heart. So it's been, the good Lord has ways of taking care of you. Sometimes when you can't take care of yourself, and I always felt that He it put me in that position to be able to help myself and maybe help others along the way. In fact, I'm going through one of the heart treatments right now. It's called EECP, Enhanced External Counterpulsation. It's a 35-treatment program, 7 weeks, 5 days a week, 1 hour each day. And it has been a tremendous help to me over the years in restoring energy and taking away angina and shortness of breath and things of that nature. So I've been blessed to be able to get in contact with people who can do those things. In fact, I was responsible for getting that equipment into the Hickory Cardiology, Hickory, North Carolina, the area that I live, that they would get that equipment so that I could take the treatments here at home. And it's, and a lot of other people have been helped by it as a result, too.
Like you say, that's just a complete blessing. It really is. 1965, another classic race, the Southern 500 at Darlington Raceway. You made it boring for the fans, man. 14 laps. Come on, Ned.
Yeah, that had to be a pretty dull race. The only thing that made it somewhat interesting and maybe kept the fans awake, everybody had trouble that day.
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't outrun. I'd like to stand here and say that, yeah, I just flat outran them by 14 laps, but that was not the case. I was having trouble, too. My engine was overheating, and the last 150 miles or so. And the thought popped in my mind, hey, if I hold that thing wide open going into the turn and keep the accelerator down, let the raw gasoline run, cut the switch off, let the raw gasoline run in there, that it would have a cooling effect. And sure enough, it did.
That's brilliant.
It cooled at 30 to 40 degrees every time I go into the turn.
Wow.
And but every time that I turned the switch back on, then it would backfire. So that would help the fans to stay awake, I guess.
That's good.
So it made it a little bit interesting for them, and we nursed it to the end. And of course, that was one of the goals that I set for myself, was to win the Southern 500, and was able to do it that day in a somewhat of a dramatic way. And it's a record that will never be broken.
Never.
The Lord is never broken, because we don't want to see that dull of a race anymore.
Well, I wouldn't call it dull. I'm sure it was exciting, especially from your viewpoint. But, 50 wins, 239 top tens, 35 poles. Is that the win that you remember the most special, or is it that first win? How can you really put, prioritize your win?
One of the goals that I set for myself when I started in the Grand National Series was to win the Southern 500 and to win the championship.
Yeah.
And so I managed to do both of those things. And so, yes, that was, as far as my driving career is concerned, that was the one that meant the most to me.
Well, and then you mentioned...
At that time, that 500-mile race, it was the race then in NASCAR, although the Daytona 500 was 6 years old or so, but it still had not surpassed Darlington in most people's minds as far as the premier race in NASCAR, because it was the first 500-mile race.
Right.
And in my opinion, and a lot of other people's opinion, too, on the toughest track that there is to race on.
So, well, let me ask you, what do you think is the toughest track nowadays, Ned?
I still think Darlington is.
Really?
Yeah, I think Darlington is the toughest track that they race on today.
Well, you know, October 13th had to be a special day. Granted, you've had so many awards, but it's got to be special to be inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame as one of the five 2011 NASCAR Hall of Fame inductees. And again, it's just an honor to have you on the show today. But you kind of even said, like, well, you were almost... Now, I wouldn't say surprised, but you thought maybe other people might have deserved it before you? Am I reading that correctly?
Well, yeah. When I left, you know, I was on the voting panel. In fact, I'll say that I was asked by NASCAR long before the original 25 nominees were named to serve on the voting panel, along with Ricky Rudd and Harry Gantt as former drivers. And when I was driving to Charlotte that morning to go into the voting session, I told my wife before I left home, I said, I don't think I have much of a chance today. I think that it'll probably be next year, if then, that we'll go give it our best shot. And then during the discussion, my name kept coming up and different support from different people. And I thought, well, wait a minute, maybe I do have a chance. And it was good that they looked at it from a historical standpoint, as well as what you accomplished on the racetrack. Certainly, Darrell Waltrip and Cale Yarborough had much better on-track records than I. But who's to say that 80 wins in their career or in the era of their career is harder to do than 50 races in my career?
Right.
And so I don't know how you can gauge those things. But anyway, they looked at the fact that I did mine first, and then the broadcasting career came along, and then we promoted races for 9 years, and so did a little bit of everything in the sport, and so I guess the total committee looked at it in that manner. So it was a huge, huge honor to be selected for the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And I'll tell you, every time I go there, I'm usually pretty busy when I go there and don't get a chance to look around at what all is there. But every person listening to this broadcast should make it a point to go there sometime, whether they're a race fan or not, because there are things there that are so certainly entertaining, but educational, too. And it's just a wonderful facility that I'm glad to see that NASCAR has it now and can show the history of the sport through the Hall of Fame.
President Ronald Reagan, you got to interview him before the 84 Firecracker 400. Was that a feather in your cap?
Definitely. Yeah, that was one of the highlights of my broadcasting career, to be able to sit with President Reagan for about 14 or 15 minutes, just he and I talking on MRN radio. That was very, very special. And I still have those tapes and have pictures of he and I there. So that was a highlight. And I expect we'll see some of that in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I'm sure. And Dale's first victory in 91 in Michigan, you got to do that. Now, I remember watching the 93 Daytona 500, and I've got to tell you, I remember watching you. I remember watching you call the race. At that time, Ned, you weren't an announcer. You weren't on top of the hauler calling out the race, telling them to go high and low, even though you're doing it. I remember at my age of 93 thinking, there's a proud papa. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that was, people have asked me many times, what was the highlight of my total career, and that was it. That meant more to me than winning the Southern 500 or the championship, because when your son is out there doing something that I was never able to accomplish, winning the Daytona 500, I mean, it's very, very special. And then the producer had the presence of mind to put the pieces together so they could make a human interest story out of it. And as we've traveled around the country, more people mentioned that than all other things put together.
Wow.
And we appreciate that, because it's a very, very special moment in history as far as the Jarrett family is concerned, and apparently as far as others are concerned, too. That was just a special moment, and you say you were listening to my words and watching his action on the racetrack and how they matched up, and I still have people that will argue with me and say, oh, he had a two-way radio. He was listening.
No, you know they're going to do
that. That was not the case. It's just natural instinct, I guess, that what I was telling him to do, he was doing it. not knowing that I was saying it.
Yeah, so, you know, you actually, I read that you felt a little bad and actually went up to Dale Earnhardt and said and apologized to him.
The next week at Rockingham, which was the next race, I really felt bad all week that I had thrown he and his fans in the ditch, rooting for my son on national television, and that's not the way that you're supposed to do it, but the producer came on my headset and said, okay, so call your son home and be a daddy, so that's what I did.
Wow.
But I still felt bad about it. So I went to Dale Earnhardt the next week, and I said, Dale, I want to apologize. He said, apologize? I said, congratulations to you guys for winning that Daytona 500. I said, yeah, but I didn't do you right or didn't do your fans right by pulling for my son on national television. That's not the way that you do it. And he stopped me and poked his finger right in my chest, and he said, don't you ever forget, I'm a daddy too.
That is awesome. That is incredible. Well, I know you've got a lot to do and you're getting ready to travel, so I just want to ask you one more question. This radio show has been able to bring a lot of new people along the Gulf Coast into racing, and I've been very fortunate about that. My day job, I'm a traffic reporter on radio and TV stations, well-known in this area, so I've got a different kind of draw that listen to this show, and we're constantly getting, I like to have the future of the sport. We're talking anywhere from go-karts on up. So we have a lot of young drivers that listen to the show, Ned. They know who you are. They know your experience, and my question to you is, if you could give a little bit of wisdom to some of these young drivers that are getting started. Bobby Allison said, get your high school diploma. Make sure you stay in grades and then continue so you can be able to talk about how the car makes these changes. Ned, what would you give these young drivers? What would you say to them?
Well, certainly that would be one thing. Get your education, as much education as you possibly can, because it will be helpful. It might not help you to drive that race car, but it'll help you through life.
Right.
And the things that come with driving a race car. And always do your best. Just give it your best every time that you go out. And be yourself. Too many times people try to imitate somebody else, and it gets them off track and out of sync and all of that. Be yourself. Learn as much as you can. Ask questions. And there are plenty of people that will tell you, people like Bobby Allison or any of us that have been there and done it, would be happy to give examples of experience and things like that, and always be honest with yourself and with your fellow man, and that'll take you a long way.
Well, can you, Ned, see, I'm going to pop that out, can you see why I had to play that interview again? Ned Jarrett, class, top of the act there. You got to appreciate everything he's done for the sport, and that's one of my favorite interviews too, so glad we could do that for you. Coming up, more NASCAR news. How about Brad Keselowski? He's back in the news again. Wonder what it is. Fast speed, Casey Kane at 193 miles an hour. We're going to talk with Dustin Long, who was at Charlotte practice this week. Hang on, NASCAR around the corner on Full Throttle Racing with Kane on FM Talk 106.5. Hey, welcome back to the show. It's Full Throttle Racing with Kane on FM Talk 106.5. If you'd like to sponsor the show, it's not hard to do. The best thing to do, find us on Facebook at Full Throttle Racing with Kane. You'll see my ugly picture up there with a microphone in it and all sorts of cool stuff. But anyway, we want you to be a part of that if you can, like Mobile International Speedway. We appreciate them. A lot of the also local tracks, they're out there. So there's lots of rumors going on. Is Deep South Speedway going to close? Is it going to open in Loxley? From the rumors, now, you know how rumors are, so we won't start them, but rumors are, you know, people said, well, Rick Crawford's going to go by the track. That is out. He's actually, I want to say, in Montana. He's back in town, but I believe he's going to be actually doing a track over there, and he has the drivers, or the guy who owns the racetrack has a young son that is coming up through late models, and I believe, from what I've heard, Rick is going to be actually doing the promotion of the track and helping as a crew chief on that young child, not young child, but young driver's career as they climb up through there. So that's exciting news for them. I can tell you the last owner, Casey, who's a good friend of mine, is out for next year, but rumors are the track is still going to open. There's more than two or three people that are looking at it. Whether they buy it, rent it out, we'll have to see, but I can tell you one of the best dirt tracks in the South, where that movie L.A. Dirt was filmed. It's coming out here in the spring. Well, it will be back again. You know, my wife Michelle and I are on Alabama Teen Challenge. We are on the advisor board, and it's pretty cool. It's a 12-month discipleship program. It helps people who deal with life controlling chronic substance abuse problems. They have a local center in Bay Minette, and they're doing their annual Buy a Turkey, Save a Life sale. This is an incredible ministry, and they're going to be selling smoked turkeys for only $35. Here's the best part. It'll be in time for Christmas, and they'll deliver it straight up to you. Baldwin County, they'll deliver them to you, deliver right to you December 23rd in Mobile County the 24th. If you want to maybe help and save a life, this is simple to do. All you got to do is call 580-0091. That's a 251 area code. It's Alabama Teen Challenge, and I promise you the turkeys are good. I'm going to get one. It's as simple as that. You can eat a turkey and help change a life. And, you know, there's been some sad news along the Gulf Coast. We lost one of our own drivers, Bradley Hoven, who drove the number 28 Legend car at Sunny South Raceway, was tragically killed in an accident this week. And it's just, it's tough. The family is going through so much. Talked to a lot of them, and it's just, we pray for them as today's the day that they bury him. And let me tell you a little bit about him. He played baseball, Bradley did, for Saraland Dixie Youth when he was growing up. But I got to tell you, racing is what he loved. And he was an avid hunter, a fisherman. And if anyone knew Bradley, well, he was also a huge Alabama football fan. And some of the posts that I've seen on his obituary online has been incredible. A lot of people just giving their wishes. And I can tell you the racetrack he was at Sunny South Raceway. Today, the funeral services are at College Park Baptist Church. Visitation starts at 10. It's in 8 Mile, Alabama, prior to the 12 o'clock service. Now, the family has been struggling with finances, insurance, and things like that, and they've asked us to help. So as a racing community, I can tell you, First Community Bank, any of the branches, they have the Bradley Hoven Fund. If you can help out, that's something. But I also want to thank NOLA Motorsports Park. They have donated a beautiful helmet. You go to my Facebook page, Full Throttle Racing with Kane, and you'll be able to see that next week. At the end of the week and before Christmas, we're going to do a two-day silent auction on Facebook for some of the things. Thank you to Miss Ida and also Tommy Prater from Mobile International Speedway. They have also helped out and give us four tickets for the ARCA race, and also the Dale Jarrett Racing Experience is also giving us, and this is huge, a ride-along program, and this would be perfect for Christmas. These things are anywhere from $400 to $500. You'll get laps around Talladega. Okay, so we're going to have all this on Facebook, prayers and thoughts to the family, and we'll have more coming up. We're still talking NASCAR, but I just wanted to pass the words to Bradley, and again, if you want to help out the family, First Community Bank along the Gulf Coast, look for the Bradley Hoven Fund. God bless, and coming up, NASCAR, we've got some fast times still to talk about. Hang on. Welcome back to the show. It's Full Throttle Racing with Kane on FM Talk 106.5. And again, the Dale Jarrett Racing Adventure. It's real easy. Just go online, look them up, or give them a call at 888-GO-RACE-1. And again, that's awesome that they're donating that ride-along program for the Bradley Hoven Fund. Again, also First Community Banks to help out with the funeral expenses with our friend there. So let's talk some NASCAR and bring in a guy who just happens to live in Charlotte. Oh, let's just go down the street and check out the track. What's all the noise about? Dustin Long with SI.com, USAtoday.com. Just a few of the things that he does. Good morning, Dustin, and we haven't talked to you since after the season, so thank you for coming on the off season. This is your vacation time, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Where's my check?
It's still coming. You know how slow this postal service gets around holidays.
Okay.
Hey, let's talk a little bit just for a few minutes. You were out at the track, Charlotte. You saw some quick speeds. I'm just looking at some of the list there. I think it was day one or day two. Don't remember. Casey Kane had a speed of 193.112, and I got to tell you, the Chevys and especially the Fords, the new body style, I know it's probably just stickers, but it looks so much more aggressive. And even on some of the videos you put on there, the engines, the motors sound a little bit different. Am I going crazy?
Well, certainly the cars are a lot different, and that's part of what NASCAR wanted with these cars, and the manufacturers wanted is to give more of that identity so that, you know, a Ford looks like a Ford, a Chevy looks like a Chevy, and a Toyota looks like a Toyota. Steve Letarte, Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s crew chief, said that his 9-year-old son can look at a car and know which one it is, which manufacturer it is, without seeing the decals on it. So he says that's what you want if you're, you know, for the sports health. So certainly, you know, they look like it. They produced a lot of speed during the test session. You know, like you said, it was like 193 is what the top speed was, and certainly that was you know, that was in the range of Greg Biffle's pole speed at Charlotte in the fall. Now, team said that part of the reason that the they were so quick during the test session was because it was optimal conditions. Mm-hmm. It was cool. It was cloudy. Charlotte's a temperature-sensitive track, so with it being so cool and cloudy, it really helped. Also, these cars have a lot more grip, on it, so allows the guys to go flying through the corners a little bit better. But there's still a lot of things that we worked on. I mean, these cars, although they're the 2013 cars, not all the parts and pieces were there. Some of the teams didn't have the steel body parts, but they were using carbon fiber, and they'll have to replace those out.
Oh, wow.
Different things like that, and Goodyear didn't have the tire that they'll be using for next year, so it all Goodyear will be using a different tire at some of these tracks. So there's a lot of different changes. Essentially, what this test was earlier this week was just a get to know me type of test for teams. I mean, for some of the drivers, for Dale Earnhardt Jr., it was the first time he'd driven a 2013 car. And while he said it was still early in the testing, he said that, he thought the car has really awesome potential.
Wow.
And he says he already liked it leaps and bounds beyond the COT car. But, of course, he's always made it known how much he hated the previous car. So, but, for guys like that, for other teams, it was, continuing to learn. For example, Richard Childress Racing had three cars there.
Austin Dillon had a great time.
Yeah, Austin Dillon was in the Paul Menard car, and, the Paul Menard's crew chief, Slugger Labby, was telling me that they'd been at all the 2013 car tests with that 27 car, and it had like 4,500 miles on it.
Wow.
In testing. It's just a mix of teams. One team that wasn't there was Roush Fenway Racing, but the Wood Brothers were there for the first day, and Roush Fenway Racing had been at like all the previous other 2013 car tests, and they were focusing on building components and things like that. So they had been there at a lot of the tests, and they used the information gathered from Trevor Bayne and the Wood Brothers when they were there. So, another interesting thing was on the first day, a lot of single car runs, but then NASCAR got with the teams and asked about 7-8 of them to go out and run about a 15 lap race.
Yeah, get her done. They'll go.
So they did that two versions of it, and in one of the versions they lowered the horsepower. They're looking at possibly a lower horsepower, not for the start of the season, but trying to see if there's a way to kind of reduce the horsepower or some things like that. If that helps the cars, what the challenges are with that. So
what's next for the drivers after this test? Obviously, the holidays are coming, but when does pre-race festivities begin in Daytona? When do the people really start shifting gears, or has that already started?
Certainly, they're off for now. Teams are still working on building the cars and things like that. The bodies, but the Cup teams will be back. It will be at Daytona to test January 10th through 12th, and then there will be another Charlotte test January 17th and 18th at Charlotte Motor Speedway of the 2013 car. Also, NASCAR announced that they will have teams come in a day early at Las Vegas, the third race of the season, to give them an extra day of testing on a mile and a half track with their car. They will get extra test time at Texas, and they will get extra practice time at California. So there's three tracks early in the season. They'll get additional practice testing time on the mile and a half, 2 mile tracks, and also this year, teams can test at tracks that host races. So the organizations can. So I think get four tests for this year. So a lot of testing going on. It's part of NASCAR trying to allow these teams to learn as much about the cars, and decide what direction they want to go with rules and things like that. Not only for the beginning of the year, for down the road, in the hopes of creating better racing and making things more exciting for the fans.
Well, Dustin, how do we keep track of you? We're wrapping up the show with about 15, 20 seconds, so you've still got some great articles. You see them on your Facebook page as well, but what are some of the sites we can keep track of you as you're riding?
Well, on Twitter, at Dustin Long, just all one word, and also at sportsillustrated.com, SI.com.
All right, Dustin, Merry Christmas. You have a great Happy New Year, and we look forward to hearing all the great stories from the track like we will this past year into next year. So, Dustin, we appreciate you as always. And like I said, I know I put the stamp on the envelope. A check should be there today.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you later, brother.
All right,
All right, there you go. And that's going to wrap it up. Another great show, Full Throttle Racing with Kane. Ned Jarrett, thank you for that interview. Jerry Goff,
kudos. Great interview. Appreciate you coming on board. We'll get more racing next weekend as we get closer to the holidays. Stay on to Facebook again, Full Throttle Racing with Kane, and we'll get more updates on how we can save and get more money for the Bradley Home and Fund. God bless you all. See you next weekend.